This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Saw the virus get outside of kind of the traditional borders where it's found, move very rapidly to new geographic locations. We were able to suppress cases, but they're still ongoing in some areas. And then we kind of forgot about Mpox.
That's Jason Kindrachuk, Associate Professor of the University of Manitoba's Max Rady College of Medicine and Infectious Diseases, on how last year's Mpox outbreak should have served as a warning. Details coming up. Also, the U.S. says that both sides in Sudan's ongoing conflict have committed war crimes, and authoritarian states reportedly are targeting journalists working in exile. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. A surge of Mpox in the Democratic Republic of Congo has scientists worried about a global outbreak, with at least 500 deaths linked to the virus this year. That's more than the number recorded last year when Mpox, formerly called monkeypox, was declared an international and U.S. health emergency. For the first time, scientists have identified sexual transmission of a version of Mpox that is tied to more fatalities in a region where the virus is endemic and most often transmitted through contact with infected animals. Jason Kindrachuk, Associate Professor at the University of Manitoba's Max Rady College of Medicine, Medical Microbiology and Infectious Diseases, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam the threat of a global Mpox outbreak never really went away.
I think for us, you know, last year was a bit of a warning sign, right? So we saw the virus get outside of kind of the traditional borders where it's found, moved very rapidly to new geographic locations. We were able to suppress cases, but they're still ongoing in some areas. And then we kind of forgot about Mpox. I think from a kind of a public standpoint, this should serve as a bit of a reminder that, you know, that this disease has not disappeared. And certainly we don't understand everything about it. Last year, we had the benefit, I think, a little bit in the sense that we had a less severe form of monkeypox virus that moved globally. What we're seeing now in Democratic Republic of the Congo, more severe form. Now we're seeing a little bit of a difference in what we've traditionally thought about transmission and maybe some additional concerns in regards to new mechanisms or new modes. And now we need to understand what the impact is.
For the first time, scientists have identified sexual transmission of a version of this Mpox virus that's linked to more fatalities in a place where, you know, Mpox is endemic. So can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, you know, last year was a bit of an alarm signal for us, right? We suddenly saw this surge in Mpox globally, and, you know, a little bit of a new flavor in terms of the type of monkeypox virus from what we had seen previously. But we had all these clusters of cases that were related back to sexual contact. Maybe transmission, we don't know for sure. A lot of data points to that, but definitely close sustained contact. And there was this overrepresentation within those that identify as gay, bisexual, or other men who have sex with men, which was different from what we had seen previously. Now we have this small cluster of cases in DRC. Too small at this point to make a lot of assessments on whether or not the epidemiology follows with what we saw last year.
That's a little more scary, isn't
yeah.
it? Because we're not talking about infection from animals. We're talking about human-to-human infections.
Well, it is. And there's this piece of saying, okay, is this new or is it something that we had missed previously? And that is always kind of the piece that I think we try to contend with of, you know, has the virus changed or are we now seeing a bigger picture of what the virus can do because maybe we're looking or more attuned to a different type of presentation of this disease? Again, last year, presentation of Mpox, very different from what we had seen historically. Now we have to kind of look at this disease with a little bit of a new lens and say, okay, in endemic regions, what have we potentially missed? And what does that mean in regard to ongoing transmission and certainly risks for expansion of that virus?
Now, you've seen this in the DRC this year. Are you guys worried that it's going to pop up in other countries too in Africa?
Well, hey, certainly we're looking, right? I think for us, the biggest piece is if we look at regions that are adjacent to those endemic areas, do we see any inference that there has been kind of this cryptic transmission or transmission that's been going under the radar, where people maybe have had symptoms that didn't look quite like Mpox and were largely self-resolving or because of stigma, they didn't move forward. What does that landscape look like? Also, from a global standpoint, now that we certainly have more resources in place to look for Mpox, I think a piece of this is now saying, okay, we can't just shut those down. We have to continue to be cognizant that the virus is still moving.
That's Jason Kindrachuk, Associate Professor at the University of Manitoba's Max Reddy College of Medicine, Medical Microbiology and Infectious Diseases. He was speaking with my colleague Carol Van Dam from Manitoba, Canada. The United States Department said, State Department said Wednesday that the Sudan's Armed Forces, SAF, and the Rapid Support Forces, RSF, have committed war crimes in their ongoing conflict. It said members of the RSF and allied militias have committed crimes against humanity and ethnic cleansing. Secretary of State Antony Blinken added that the SAF and the RSF must stop the conflict now and comply with their obligations under international humanitarian and human rights law. State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller spoke to reporters in Washington yesterday.
The SAF and the RSF must end this brutal conflict. The warring parties must comply with their obligations under international humanitarian law and international human rights law, and we call on them to protect civilians, hold accountable those responsible for atrocities and other abuses, allow unhindered humanitarian access, and negotiate an end to this conflict. For too long, the belligerents have killed, raped, and attacked civilians with impunity in Sudan. The international community must work towards meaningful justice for victims and the affected communities and bring an end to this era of impunity.
Miller said the U.S. will continue to push for peace and democracy in Sudan.
The United States stands with the Sudanese people, who did not ask for this war, in support of their rightful demands for a transition to democracy and freedom, peace, and justice. We will use all the tools at our disposal to support these aims.
Earlier in the week, the U.S. imposed its latest wave of sanctions on three individuals who served in the ousted Omar al-Bashir administration for their role in destabilizing Sudan and undermining peace. Miller said the U.S. is prepared to impose more sanctions on individuals and entities perpetuating the violence in Sudan.
We have imposed sanctions in the past, and just because we are not announcing sanctions today does not mean we will not impose additional measures in the future. I will also say I think it's important that the United States speak with moral clarity about what we see happening and what we can document, and that's what we've done here. We think there's real value in that, and we'll continue to do it.
The latest round of U.S.-Saudi mediated talks between Sudan's warring parties in the Saudi city of Jeddah hit another dead end earlier this week. Miller said the U.S. will not give up on Sudan and will continue to engage with regional actors to bring an end to the nearly eight-month-long conflict.
The talks in Jeddah broke down because both parties, the SAF and RSF, repeatedly refused to adhere to the commitments that they made at those talks. So what we will do is continue to work with our partners in the region to make clear that there can be no military solution to this conflict, to make clear that civilians continue to suffer multiple atrocities, and to try to continue to work with our partners in the region to bring an end to the conflict. But ultimately, that takes the two parties coming to the table, and not just coming to the table, but adhering to the commitments that they make, and so far that they have been simply unwilling to do that.
The Rapid Support Forces face allegations of orchestrating an ethnic massacre in West Darfur 2 decades after the region experienced what the U.S. calls a genocidal campaign. In Khartoum, the capital, residents accused the paramilitary group of engaging in acts such as rape, looting, and the unlawful imprisonment of civilians. Additionally, experts suggest that the army's air and artillery assaults on residents residential neighborhoods where the RSF holds influence may constitute violations of international law. VOA contacted Sudan's ambassador to the U.S., Mohammed Idris, for comments on this report, but received no response. Additionally, we made calls to Sudan's armed forces spokesperson, Brigadier General Nabil Abdallah, but he never answered his phone. RSF advisor Yusif Izzat also was unavailable for comment. However, he told VOA last week that allegations of ethnic cleansing by the RSF in Darfur are false and mere media campaign against the RSF. He said all areas in West Darfur are safe and civilians are protected. The United States Congress is urging a strong, coordinated U.S. response to tackle conflicts and instability in the Sahel, which it describes as dire as it examines its policy towards the African region. VOA's Ignatius Anor reports from Capitol Hill.
Exacerbating conflicts and instability in Sahelian nations like Sudan, Niger and Chad, and West Africa's Guinea, Mali and Burkina Faso prompted a congressional hearing by the U.S. Foreign Affairs Committee on Africa on December the 5th. The committee invited senior U.S. government officials to answer questions and provide a pathway to what it sees as a dire situation in the Sahel. John James, chair of the U.S. Foreign Affairs Subcommittee on Africa, questioned the U.S.'s commitment to bring in peace in Sudan, for example, citing funding to Ukraine to be more than 20 times the non-military assistance to Sudan.
Ukraine has a population of approximately 43.79 million people. Sudan has a population of approximately 45.66 million people. Yet the non-military assistance that has gone to Ukraine is $12.4 billion. And the humanitarian assistance to Sudan is $620 million. I've heard things like we need to do everything we possibly can. But what I see is you have almost identical population sizes, but 20 times the commitment financially to the people of Ukraine than the people in Sudan.
Molly Fee, Assistant Secretary at the U.S. Department of State Bureau of African Affairs, responded, saying the Sudanese people affirmed that the U.S. has been a true ally in trying to end the current turmoil.
My contacts with the Sudanese people tell me that they believe that we are the best friend to the nation. It is not Russia or China who showed up to try and help end this conflict. It was the United States. We are perceived to be disinterested and care about the civilians and care about the stability of the state. That is not the position of other partners in the international community. The strength we have is that they want to have a partnership with us and they want our help to resolve the conflict.
Celeste Walanda, Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Affairs at the U.S. Department of Defense, says extremist organizations are capitalizing on weak governments in the Sahel and are now approaching countries in the Gulf of Guinea.
In the short and medium term, we will support African-led counterterrorism operations to disrupt the most acute terrorist threats, with a particular emphasis on those targeting U.S. interests. In the long term, we will emphasize bilateral security assistance to African defense and security forces in order to build their own homegrown capacity to counter these threats without excessive external assistance.
Robert Jenkins is assistant to the administrator of the USAID's Bureau for Conflict Prevention and Stabilization. He says the donor agency is working to empower young people in the Sahel with the education and skills needed so they do not fall prey to extremist groups.
The U.S. has been the third largest contributor to the Global Partnership for Education, a multilateral organization providing education services in several countries across the Sahel. Peace and stability in the Sahel requires bringing peace and stability to Libya, which has served as a source of and destination for weapons and armed fighters.
The U.S. Foreign Affairs Committee on Africa says Russia is exploiting the instability within the Sahel via its paramilitary Wagner group to make profits and score geopolitical influence. Meanwhile, the U.S. State Department is appealing to Congress to confirm much-needed ambassadors to the African Union, Nigeria, Niger, Somalia, Djibouti, and Gabon. Ignatius Ano, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wahib in Washington. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. A report by the U.S.-based rights group Freedom House says authoritarian states are increasingly targeting journalists working in exile as part of a reprisal campaign against dissidents living outside their countries. The report says as attacks on free and independent media increase globally, more and more journalists are being forced to work from exile and are increasingly facing the threat of transnational repression in their new homes abroad. Tactics used include physical harm, detention and rendition, online harassment, reprisals against family members, smear campaigns and other efforts that degrade their morale and commitment to the profession. It warns that many incidents go unreported or are very hard to verify. A senior U.S. Department official says U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken spoke with Israel's Minister of Strategic Affairs Ron Dermer today to say the U.S. is pleased with new deliveries of fuel to Gaza, but still wants aid deliveries increased. Blinken also told Dermer that civilian casualties remain too high and Israel must step up its efforts to reduce them. Also today, United Nations Humanitarian Chief Martin Griffiths said he saw promising signs that the Kerem Shalom crossing from Israel into the Gaza Strip might be opened soon to allow aid in. Since the conflict between Israel and Hamas began, aid has been restricted to entering via the Egyptian-controlled Rafah crossing. Aid organizations have said supplies have been too limited to ease the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. Israel has defended its humanitarian efforts and called on the international community to increase its capabilities. The Hamas-run Gaza Health Ministry said today more than 17,000 Palestinians have died in Gaza since the Israeli offensive began 2 months ago in response for attacks by Hamas militants on Israeli communities. About 1,200 people died in those attacks, and Hamas militants took about 240 Israelis and foreign nationals hostage. Also today, two international human rights groups said Israeli strikes that killed a Reuters videographer and wounded 6 other journalists in South Lebanon in October were apparently deliberate and a direct attack on civilians. Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch said the airstrikes should be investigated as war crimes. Israeli officials have said they do not deliberately target journalists and other civilians. Nigerian President Bola Tinubu has ordered security agencies and state authorities to conduct a thorough investigation into the bombing of Muslim worshippers at a village in northern Kaduna State on Sunday. Amnesty International said at least 120 people were killed in the bombing, citing reports from field staff and local residents. Timothy Obiezu reports from the Nigerian capital, Abuja.
In a statement Tuesday, President Bola Tinubu described the bombing as unfortunate, disturbing, and painful. Tinubu ordered a thorough investigation of the bombing and also called for calm. The president also said surviving victims must receive proper medical attention. The Nigerian military said an unmanned aerial device on routine patrol wrongly profiled and bombed local villagers in Tundunbiri village Sunday night when they gathered to celebrate Maulud, the birthday of the Muslim prophet Muhammad. Nigerian forces often target the hideouts of armed groups known as bandits with aerial bombardment. Nigeria's National Emergency Management Agency announced that 85 people died, mostly women and children, and said 66 others were seriously injured. But locals say the death toll could be higher and say many bodies were severely mutilated.
Jabir Ibrahim's farm is near the site of the drone attack. He says the government is making empty promises.
I met them already killing the victims. For me, myself personally, I have around 75 to, you know, or more than that on ground that were yet to be built, I think. Nothing will happen. It's just noise, you know? Government will just go there, make noise, say how necessary and useless things are left. After 2 days, then nothing more. They are just saying it's so that for people to calm down.
The Nigerian military has also ordered an investigation and promised the outcome will guide future operations to eliminate gaps in human and artificial intelligence. Authorities also promised to compensate families. But rights group Amnesty International says authorities have reneged on past promises made to families of errant military bombing. Aminu Hayatu is Amnesty International's conflict researcher.
You know, there was another strike, airstrike in Zamfara. There was another one in Niger State. And many others. It is becoming an impunity on the part of government not to hold those who, these airstrikes accountable. And in the end, we would not hear the story again. And the families of those who become the victims of this airstrike are not compensated in any way. So it is really worrisome.
Hayatu says the government must be held accountable this time round.
The civilians who have become victims in this airstrike are supposed to be protected by government. And we have consistently called on government to be accountable and to be transparent, in the investigation so that citizens of Nigeria would know who are behind these airstrikes and what judicial procedure they would be subjected.
Nigeria is struggling to quell a 14-year-long insurgency in its northeast, as well as kidnap for ransom attacks by armed groups in the northwest and central states. In January, 39 civilians were erroneously bombed in Nasarawa State near the capital, and authorities promised to investigate. But rights groups like Amnesty International are still demanding accountability for that strike and others. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
In Sierra Leone, police today called in a former president for questioning over recent attacks that officials say was a failed coup. Information Minister Chemo Ba said police summoned ex-president Ernest Bai Koroma to their headquarters within 24 hours for questioning on the failed attempted coup last month. Koroma said he would honor the summons and asked his supporters to be calm, according to a statement from his office. Earlier, he condemned the attacks on November 26th. Also, the government held a burial ceremony for 18 members of the security forces who were killed during the attacks. President Julius Mada Bio attended the burials of 16 soldiers, a police officer, and a prison guard at the military cemetery in Freetown. Grieving family members were also present, along with religious, military, and police representatives, while hundreds of people lined the path to the cemetery to pay their respects. According to the French news agency AFP, Biou said fallen comrades gave their lives in defense of democracy and their sacrifice will not be in vain. 60 people have been arrested since the takeover effort. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Shogun Chung, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.